When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 162. I'm your host Will Evans, and we are back. Yes, a new year, new exciting guests from the world of farming and food, but unfortunately for you listeners, the same old stale dad jokes from me. But on the bright side, who better to kick off Rock and Roll Farming again than a man who's transformed himself over the last 9 months. And he's here to tell us all about it. Charles Anion, it was about time I had you on the show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm a bit gutted. I'm 162nd in the list, really. I'm delighted to be on, but I have been asking you, pitching for me to be on for about 5 years now. So here I am.
There's so many interesting people to speak to. There's loads of people I haven't got to yet. It's difficult. Anyway, though, how are you? How are you coping in the times of COVID? Are you all right down there in Lincolnshire?
Yeah, not too bad. I think in the farming world, we've been able to carry on as normal. We're very lucky.
Yeah.
But I haven't missed a day's work. I've struggled being furloughed. Obviously, I got my exercise, parted company with my good lady of many years on New Year's Day. So that's, a bit of a transition.
Yeah.
And you can't really go out and meet any friends. You can't go out for dinner. It's a bit frustrating, but there's an awful lot of people in this world, in this country, whatever, who are in a far worse situation than I am. I think, bearing up okay, looking forward to it being over.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So, you're in Lincolnshire, and it feels like I've had more people on the podcast from there than possibly anywhere else in the country. But
well,
I guess it is proper farming country, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's tourism's fairly big in Lincolnshire, obviously, with the coast.
Yeah.
And Lincoln's quite a special city with a cathedral, a castle, a lot of history. But, it is very flat in Lincolnshire, apart from over on the Wolds, which are stunning. But the vast majority of Lincolnshire is fertile. Some a lot more fertile south of the county than at where I am, but it's very much a farming county.
Yeah.
And as a leader of our industry described it a couple of years ago, and I'm proud to say the powerhouse of British agriculture. So, but I'm very biased. But, it's proper farming country, and it's a great place to be, especially in times of strife.
Yeah. So how long have your family been farming there?
My family have been in the village of Springthorpe, where I am now, since 1820.
Wow.
So we've been here quite a long time. I think I'm sixth generation or something, Daff.
Wow. On the same farm?
Yeah. No, it's changed a bit over the years. But
So 200 years last year. That's awesome.
Yeah. We've been here a long time, but it's a privilege to be here. It's quite a nice little corner of Lincolnshire. So
growing up then with that kind of legacy, did you always want to be a farmer?
Farming's always very much been in my blood, but when I was growing up, I suppose I did my work experience with land agents. And after school, I suppose I was toying with the idea of land agency. But then I think just before I went on a gap year over to Australia in the year 2000, I think when I was over there, I decided to, commit to agriculture. So, no regrets. It's a good life. I think we've got a real community here in agriculture, which many other industries haven't got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine you in red chinos, so I don't think Land Agency would have suited you.
I do have some chocolate cords, though, which are quite a new addition. And I do have some red chinos, actually.
There you go. So did you study agriculture at university?
I did agricultural business at the University of Newcastle upon Tyne.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Which was, it was a great 3 years.
I'll bet.
I played a lot of rugby and drank a lot of beer, but I didn't really go to many farms. And it was a jack of all trades, master of none degree. Enjoyed it. Got a lot out of it, but mm-hmm. didn't really major in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had my time again, I love the rugby up there. I think Harper Adams is producing some quality students nowadays. So I think, yeah. But I love Newcastle. No regrets, really.
Yeah, well, brilliant town to have some fun in. So what did you do when you left university? You go straight home to the farm, or did you take a few years out?
No, I basically worked in a sandwich factory as quality control for a few months, which was a fairly dire job. And then I suppose I went over to I went travelling again. I thought I got myself a work visa for Australia. Went travelling with Kate Morgan. Pig farmer from Driffield, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners know.
Former Rock and Roll Farming guest and all-round brilliant person, Kate Morgan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And went over via Asia, Thailand, Cambodia, which was a fascinating place. Then ended up in Sydney. I had some friends in Sydney because I was over there on a gap year mm-hmm. after school, where I worked in a school, quite a big school in Sydney's North Shore, Knox Grammar School. Photocopying this, relief lessons, etc. So I had a lot of friends when I went back, and I did numerous jobs, door-to-door sales, selling energy.
Did you?
And then I got a job laying rubber flooring in kids' playgrounds. Those rubber grant rules. I was never given anything too responsible to do because it was quite a bit of an artwork. But mixing the granules with polyurethane. Lots of sweeping up, but no, I had a great time there for a year, and then came back to the farm in March 2016, I think, and 2006. Sorry.
Okay.
Been here ever since.
Did you grow your hair or get any questionable tattoos whilst you were in Australia?
No. My hair, when long, just looks ridiculous. So, it was a very good time of my life, and it was a very hand-to-mouth existence over there. I think doing menial jobs, and the guy I used to work with used to like alcohol much more than sort of pears. So I couldn't really afford any questionable tattoos, and thank God.
So what did the farm look like when you came home? What was happening at the farm then?
The farm was about just over 300 hectares, combinable crops, wheat, barley, oilseed rape, spring beans, winter barley back then. Entry-level scheme, we're in the entry-level scheme. Dad put us in the entry-level scheme just because we got so many hedges. We've always sort of majored on the environment here and kept all the hedges in the 70s when a lot of people pulled them out.
Yeah.
So we ended up with an awful lot of small fields. Mm-hmm. I introduced a very small livery yard to the farm, which has been, quite good profit-wise. We've got a few grass fields which don't make any money, only probably 30 acres of permanent grass, half of which is let out to our neighbouring dairy farmer, and then the other half, a couple of smallish paddocks, which were just not really doing anything. Mm-hmm. Then we had an old crew yard, so we put some seven quite nice boxes in, and then decided to try and attract the general public, thinking it was going to be a great idea at the time. To try just to get a bit more income, but when you get Horse people are great. Horses are great, but I would say they bring some bloody strange people with them.
I'm laughing because I know quite a few people who also do livery stables. Some of them are friends and some of them are family members, and they all say exactly the same thing.
But we've had some great, the vast majority of people have been great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now I've got one chap in, Stuart, who's, I don't know how many horses he's got, but it seems like an awful lot. But he's the first person where I've actually got on with the owner better than the horses.
Okay.
So we had an incident a couple of weeks ago when I walked past Mother's prized lawn and saw four horses grazing it.
Oh, no.
Which, obviously, yeah, didn't go down too well. Because Stuart, by the time they're caught, Stuart's long gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm in the firing line, so... Yeah, what do you do? But yeah. No, the livery yard was just a way of getting a bit more income, a bit of a diversification. Because the Gainsborough area, it's a very historical area. You know, there was the odd Civil War skirmish around here. Gainsborough was capital of England for 5 days in 1013.
Was it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. When Canute and Swain fought beer. You know, arrived.
Wow.
But nowadays, industry's gone, like a lot of places, and left a shell of its former self.
Mm.
So there's not too much money around here.
Yeah.
So diversification has always, you know, it's not like we're farming in the M40 corridor.
No.
I'm sure you're going to get listeners now saying, you know, we farm in the M40 corridor and it's not old roses.
No, yeah. It's interesting you say that, actually, because, you know, it's a bit the same where I live, sort of not too far from former industrial town, and it's not a particularly affluent area at all, very kind of working class area. And I think sometimes for a number of years now in farming in the UK, we've all been policymakers and politicians have all just sort of encouraged us to diversify, you know, diversify, that's the answer. But it's not always that easy. You know, we can't all have a farm shop, can we? Or, you know, especially if you don't live in a particularly affluent area. And I don't think that's an excuse, is it? It's just,
I think there's a couple of people around me who have got very good farm shops.
Yeah.
But they're right on a main road.
Mm.
And we're sort of five or six miles away from the same main road.
Yeah.
And the people just aren't going to travel.
No. But, no.
Saying that, I've always thought over the last few years, what can we do to diversify? Then COVID's appeared, and a lot of these diversifications will be, really struggling. But it's a difficult area around here. And another of my biggest problems is I've always. One of my claim to fame was at one point, touch wood, I think I was Lincolnshire's most burgled man, stroke, probably Britain's most burgled man, 32 times in 8 years.
Jesus.
One way or another.
Wow.
A few years ago, my sister was debating whether she came back to the farm. We were looking at safari tents, glamping, and that was just when the burglary was at its height. And it was just a case of how can you invite guests to my neck of the woods when they're probably just going to get the car broken into?
Because you don't really associate Lincolnshire with that. You know, it's not like you're on the outskirts of a major city or anything. You know, that's quite shocking.
Yeah, we're not too far away from road links, and we've got some fairly big cities not too far away. Sheffield's 35 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
Hull's 35 minutes away in the other direction, both with decent road links. But I think a lot of my problems were much closer to home. In fact, where my main problems start, I've driven past probably about four times today. They're very local.
Okay.
I don't think the rock and roll farming listeners, so I'm all right.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. You mentioned environmental schemes and some of the work you've done there. Is that something that you're quite focused on the farm. We're obviously in new trading environment now. We've left the EU. There are going to be new schemes coming in, green Brexit, public money for public goods, all that jazz. Are you hopeful that they will get the new schemes for farmers right?
Not really.
No.
And we've left Europe. Brexit's happened. I was a Ramona, but you know that ship's long since sailed now.
Yeah.
But the administration of agriculture in the UK, in my opinion, over the last, well, since I came back to the farm, has been fairly shocking.
Hmm.
When we first joined the higher level scheme, 2007, you know, things were a lot better than they are now. You used to know when you were going to get paid, you knew what you were going to get paid for. In the last 5 years, it's just turned into a shambles and no one seems to know what's going on. Can that be, are they going to improve now we've left Europe? It's the administration, you know, you see a lot of people on social media complaining that, and we had this a couple of years ago, whereas you're finding out you've been accepted onto a scheme 3 months after the scheme started.
Yeah.
You know, things like that shouldn't really happen.
No.
Public schemes for public goods. Yeah, it's a lovely idea. Will they get it right? Do the policymakers spend enough time on farm?
Hmm.
I think to be able to, you know farming, you've got to spend time on a farm, not in an office in London, in Whitehall or whatever. It's going to be very interesting, the whole Elms thing, but it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back. Hmm. And is it ever going to appear? I'm sure it will at some point, but. I've sort of given up waiting. I know we're currently looking to expand our environmental agreements, but you know, will they get it right? I don't know. I'm kind of hoping so, but can I say with confidence they will? No, certainly not.
No. Well, I think most farmers feel the same. The National Farmers Union are obviously working very hard on it. And this is what you call a segue. Your great, great grandfather was one of the founder members of the National Farmers Union. And I think that's so cool. I was blown away.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. John Tom Glue. Basically what happened was, obviously there's the Lincolnshire argument, there's a Shropshire argument, but Guy Smith's book has got the Lincolnshire photo on it. It was set up, it was originally muted for a Lincolnshire Farmers Union at the Harmston Puppy Show in 1904,
okay,
I think. And basically 12 farmers got together and said, we need a union, just a bit of cooperation. And all 12 were sent off to find a friend. And so my great-great-grandfather, John Tom Glue, wasn't one of the original 12, but he was one of the friends.
Okay.
He was taken to a meeting at the Albion Hotel. And but his photo did adorn the front of Guy Smith's book, so I claim it.
That's really cool.
Really cool. I actually went to visit him quite recently. I'm a keen walker. And, you know, I go out with what's called the walking club, which sounds a bit, it's just me and two mates. You know, when we have our Christmas party and get in a hell of a state, it just gives it a bit more, if we call it the walking club. But, we were walking past the churchyard where I knew he'd been buried. And it's not far from me, but there's a big river in the way, the River Trent's in the way. So I've never been, and we popped in to see him. And, I'm really quite proud of that, and proud of him to have you know, help form an organization which is still firing on all cylinders, 116, 117 years later. And, you know, we've been members ever since and proud to be members. I think they do a wonderful job.
Yeah. And arguably in these times of great change and upheaval, more relevant than ever. And you are involved in it yourself, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I was branch chairman of Lincoln and Gainsborough branch, which is the original branch, obviously. 10 or so years ago, I was chairman for 3 years. And then I still attend Lincolnshire County Group meetings. And I'm a delegate on the regional crops board for the East Midlands. I think it was just a way of, when I came back to the farm, I went to boarding school, I went to university, I spent a lot of time in Australia. When I came back to this area, I didn't really know many people.
Yeah.
Because I'd been away since the age of 13. And it was just a way of meeting people, expanding my contacts.
Mm.
And I've been going ever since. I think it's very important to, you know, keep your nose to the ground, so to speak, keep your ear to the ground even. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been very interesting. Introduced me to a lot of people. And it's great. But I always think it's important that farmers should be on these boards.
Yeah.
Throughout the industry, because, you know, a lot of the policy these boards discuss, well, all the policy for the NFU is geared at farmers.
Mm.
So it should be us who have got a massive, massive say in it, really.
Mm. Yeah, no, definitely agree. And you're also heavily involved closer to home in the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. Tell us about that.
The Lincolnshire Agricultural Society is, we're 15 or so miles from the showground here. One of those things where I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I'm very proudly associated with the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. They do a fantastic job. I was chairman of their under 35s, despite being well over 35 for 4 or 5 years. And we used to go to, you know, look around supply chain, factories. And it used to be a good opportunity to go inside the factories. And it gave me a vehicle to get inside these factories. So it was really quite interesting. Lincolnshire still has a fantastic show, agricultural show, where it did pre-COVID.
Yeah.
And I'm a steward there, so I got to wear a bowler hat for a couple of days. Cue an awful lot of my friends to find me to poke abuse. Mr. Ben, odd job, that's sort of and it's just such a nice couple of days, because anybody that follows my Twitter account or knows me knows that I'm a very proud Lincolnshire man.
Yeah, very much so.
And to have such a slick organisation like the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, you know, I'm just proud to be associated with it, and proud that they, you know, asked me to help out on occasion. I was privileged to lead a tractor convoy and put together a tractor convoy past the local hospice last June, because it was their birthday. And it got me out of the house, but it was a real feel-good thing to do.
Yeah.
I've been on the committee for the Lincolnshire Farming Conference for 4 or 5 years, and chaired the Farming Conference 2019, mm-hmm. which was, you know, a really great thing to do. Okay. It was really quite stressful to stand up in front of 300 people and keep proceedings going. Was up there with one of the more stressful things I've ever done, and very time consuming. My introduction took quite a lot more took quite a lot of doing.
Yeah.
And one of my vices is, I vape occasionally.
Okay.
And I had to stand up in front of everybody doing the housekeeping and saying the use of electronic cigarettes is not allowed in here, after having come out of the toilets myself before, having a crafty vape. So
I'm sure you can be forgiven for that. But I mean it's a big deal, isn't it? As you know, I've done a sort of couple of similar things over the last years where I've had to stand up in front and, you know, speak to a lot of people. And it is, if you're not used to it, it's a big deal, isn't it? You know, well, it's some people's worst nightmare, isn't it? So if you can do it, you know, get through it, you feel pretty good about it afterwards, I think.
I'm glad I did it. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
But it never stops. I never stop being apprehensive about it, especially with that amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst thing is, you'll go to just random dinners not necessarily fancy dinners, just the local, you know, group of 10 farmers, and they need to thank someone. And they'll look at me and think, oh, Charles is good at that kind of thing. Sod off. I want a night off. I've just come out to, you know, keep under the radar. And, yeah, it sort of never leaves you. But, yeah, I don't mind doing it, really. And I'm always glad I did it. But, yeah, I do prefer. I know a lot of people, a lot of listeners will find this hard to believe, but I do kind of prefer to be live a slightly quieter life.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, yes. Moving on to that, then something that you did that you've been doing over the last, I suppose, 9-10 months. How did you get started with running?
Basically, I've always been a very keen swimmer.
Okay.
And I live 15 minutes away from the local pool, the local council run pool. So I go down there most nights for in between when I finish work in the evening, 5:30, pool opened. I go down and do 80, 90 lengths.
Do you? Wow. That's
used
a lot.
To, used to.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I've got such a big engine nowadays when I'm running. So I was always quite a fit guy.
Yeah.
But then I'd go past the supermarket on the way home, and I suppose living quite a solitary life, going in the supermarket really means a mean way of seeing people.
Yeah.
So I'd pop in, and I was one of those kind of people that would say, right, I've worked hard now, I'll have a scotch egg for the drive home. I've worked hard, I'll get some cherry bakers when I've had my tea. And before you know it, you're actually replacing and more the calories you've burnt off. So I was exercising like buggering, but I was still 17 stone. Well, high 16s anyway. Whether I ever hit the magic 17, I don't know. But and basically, I was sat on a friend's sofa in March, and they said, I can't quite work out how you do so much exercise and you're so fat. And I was there. It's something I've always thought about. And I was there thinking, well, it doesn't really make sense. So, and then I thought, right, in lockdown with the pool closing, I'm going to end up the size of a house. So I sort of drilling happened. And then Liz Hogarth, who's been my vice captain for Team England, nominated me for that Run 5 for the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
Run 5 and donate for the NHS. And I thought, to get in the spirit of things, I'll do it. But obviously it won't be a 5K. It'll just be me doing whatever in the garden, you know, around the garden where no one can see. This will be a bit embarrassing. And I didn't actually own any trainers. So luckily the grass had been cut. So I ran a couple of laps around my orchard and then walked an awful lot of laps around my orchard and did that for about 40 minutes and then thought, oh, that'll do.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I'd better get some trainers. And they arrived on the birthday end of April. And I went for a run. I went for a 5K. I didn't bother with Couch to 5K, but I probably should have done it. It's a great thing.
Mm.
And I knocked off 5K, having not run for 20 years, in just under 35 minutes, which with a bit of walking in, and I was quite chuffed with that.
Yeah, but.
And when you're chuffed with something, you sort of carry on.
Yeah.
Do it a bit more.
Yeah.
And so the next day I went and I did it, and I brought my time down a bit. And I sort of mixed it up with cycling because I was at a stage I'd had a bit of, I fell out with a good friend in, well, end of April. And, you know, quite a difficult situation.
Okay.
And exercise, you know, it was a very frustrating situation, but exercise was a bit of an outlet at that time. And so I did a couple of runs. And then the next day I went out on my bike, which had never been home from the pub. Never been further than the pub. And you soon get into a cycle.
Yeah.
And I just sort of kept running. I was running the Monday, Wednesday and Friday, just 5K with quite a lot of walking involved. And my time, she started coming down and down and down. And then I got a bit injured. I was walking one day. I think I overdid it. And I sort of went cycling for a couple of weeks without running. And then I came back to running. I'd briefly broken 30 minutes for a 5K. And I did cycling more or less every day for couple of weeks, just, you know, 20, 25K. And I came back and I knocked off 5K in 27 minutes.
Wow. So are you a very competitive person?
Yeah, very.
Yeah. With yourself?
Yeah, mainly with myself.
Yeah.
And so I kept going and going and going. And I suppose the time kept coming down. And the more I did it, the more weight I lost, so the easier it got.
Yeah.
And obviously I kept cycling in there. And, it started to change things. And when you see weight coming off, you think, oh, this is going in the right direction. I'll carry on. I'll continue what I'm doing. And I've got an Apple Watch, and which is soon to be retired. But on an Apple Watch, you've got to close these rings. And I remember when I first got it, when I was swimming, I managed to close them 23 days on the trot. And I thought, with running 5K and my daily exercise, I'm actually closing it. So that sort of kept me exercising every day, because I wanted to close it. And I thought, I'm going to beat 23 days. So I beat 23 days. And I thought, well, it'd be a shame to stop now. And this is 10 months later, 9 months later, I've just closed it for the 273rd time in a row.
That's absolutely incredible.
So I am, bloody hell. I am slightly addicted. the thing with me is I've always been on the sports field. I've always been sporty. Yeah. I've always played rugby. I did some rifle shooting at school, and we were national champions when I was there, which was great. But I've never been particularly good at sport. I've always been one of the first on the team sheet, but only because I'm keen and I'm always there and always reliable.
Yeah, same here, really. Yeah.
And I think with running, you know, I thought to myself, I'm actually
you're good at it.
Fairly decent at it.
Mm.
And then I tried to keep it up during harvest, just 5Ks, 5Ks, although I did try and build it up a bit before harvest, but harvest got in the way and obviously you don't have time.
Yeah.
So I was going out at 5:30 in the morning some nights just for some mornings just for 5K. So I kept it up over harvest. And then when we got drilled up, I started to build it up a bit and build it up a bit. And then I suppose I started entering some virtual races, virtual 10Ks, and started posting times. The first virtual 10K I did, it was sub 50 minutes, which is sort of well above average.
And
I've never been well above average at anything.
did you start to enjoy the actual running itself, or was it just the results, or do you enjoy the running part of it?
I think mainly the results.
Yeah.
I you know, I've seen a massive difference in myself, the way I look. I look at photographs of me now from a year ago, which I remember thinking at the time, oh, that's not a bad photo. I'm thinking, crikey, I did get big.
It is unreal. I mean, I've seen photos of before and after, and obviously met you quite a few times. You look like a different person.
Yeah, no, a lot of people say that.
Yeah. Do you feel better for it as well?
I think I do. Yeah. I've never really given that, you know, not drastically better.
Yeah,
but mentally, not that I've ever really suffered mentally. I think I'm a lot more confident.
Yeah,
I have started building a new wardrobe, which is going to be bloody expensive. I do think I am a different person, really.
Yeah.
A much more content person.
Yeah.
Much keener to go out and face the world. However, with COVID, the world's not ready to face me.
Yeah, well, hopefully soon. So, obviously, you started, as you said, just sort of running and walking around the garden a bit, and it's kind of culminated, and we'll go on to Run 1000 in a minute, but culminated in you do a marathon. Was it last week, 10 days ago?
Yeah, 10 days ago.
So, I mean, I've done a few marathons, but it's always been in a city, Manchester, London, with lots and lots of crowds, people cheering you on, which is a big part of it. You did it pretty much on your own. Tell us about that.
Basically, it was, well, when I first, it was obviously being captain of Team England, it was a way of, the marathon was just a cheap way to try and get more fundraising in the pot.
Yeah.
Really. I think we got to about £4,500 in the Team England pot for the Farming Community Network. And I thought one day, right, I'm going to do a marathon. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to do a marathon. And it's going to be an absolute disaster. But it might get us over £5,500. Because if you're given a platform, especially in COVID times, to go and raise money for a charity, you've got to hit it. You've got to hit it hard.
Yeah.
And so I made the claim in one of my videos, which I always film on my upstairs landing in front of an England flag, that I'm going to do a marathon if we get over £5,500. And didn't think anything more of it. And I thought, it's going to be dreadful. I'm going to run and walk it. And, you know, it's probably going to take me 6-7 hours, but, you know, I'll do it. It'll be fine. So that was that. And then we raised £5,500 so the marathon was on. And then I suppose I started building up my running. I got to 16K, 10 miles fairly easily. And then I thought in end of November, I'm going to try a half marathon. And my pace, you know, was fairly consistent with the pace I do when I was doing a 10K. And, you know, an average 10K, not going for it 10K, not a virtual 10K. And I was knocking those off in under an hour and 55 minutes. And I thought, oh. So it got me thinking. So I did a couple of those. And then on January the 1st, I went out and thought, I'm going to do a half marathon plus, which is just a half marathon plus a bit more. And ended up doing 32 kilometers, 20 miles.
Yeah.
At quite a respectable pace, which would have, if I'd have done the last 6 miles, to get in under 4 hours, I'd have needed to do that in an hour and 6 minutes. And I've never, ever taken an hour and 6 minutes to do a 10K, at which point I thought there might be something in this.
Yeah.
So then, you know, kept training, one more long run. My taper was very bad due to my Apple Watch addiction. the 2 days before it, I did a 10-mile bike ride on both days. And I was so motivated. The crowds didn't really matter. A couple of people did turn out, which was great. But I was so focused. I think I just thought to myself, it'll be such a nice gesture to get around.
Yeah.
9 months after I was a 17 stone man who didn't own any trainers, to go from that to a sub 4 hour marathon in 9 months would be something I could be really proud of.
For sure.
So that was with me the whole time. And that really egged me on. And it was a typical Amun affair. Dad was driving the medical vehicle. thank God I didn't need it. And he's sticking his hand out with a bottle of water every now and then. And came in 3 hours 53. But
that's brilliant.
I've always been very keen. Anybody that follows me on Twitter knows that every day when I go for a run or a cycle, I'll always post.
Yeah.
The result on Twitter. And that's not a way of sort of blowing my own trumpet. It's just a way of me being accountable.
Yeah, it's very useful. I've done the same, and I've read magazine articles in Running World and things like that, where people have said it's a really useful tool for that kind of thing. So
because I know my capability,
yeah,
Whereas if there wasn't an Apple Watch timing me and it didn't go on Strava or didn't go on Twitter, I'd just walk.
Hmm.
I'd go 50 yards and walk.
Hmm.
So that keeps me motivated to keep going. And obviously, we're, you know, that WhatsApp group, the Lone Wolves, it's always nice to post.
Yeah.
It's much nicer to post a marathon time of 3:53 than it would be to post a marathon time with 1 minute, you know, 4 minutes, 4 hours, 1 minute. And then I was about 24 miles. And the one thing that could have brought the whole house crashing down was cramp.
Yeah.
And I could feel my leg cramping up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, please don't do this to me. And somehow, although I slowed down fairly dramatically, but still kept within the 6 minutes a kilometer, just, I managed to get home. And it was lovely. There was a few, you know, very few people in the village. One outside my parents' gate with my parents banging a saucepan and a few people on the village green.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Where the problem started was when I got in. And I didn't have any energy or anything. And Team England, team sponsor, sent me a text saying, have you finished yet? And all I could muster was an England flag emoji. Just to say, I'm back, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And all I could manage on Twitter was, because there's a lot of well-wishers on Twitter, it was simple, I'm back.
Yeah.
And then I went for a bath after about, I'd recovered a bit. And that just lowered my blood pressure, something chronic. And I stood up and that started the most miserable hour, I think, of my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was dizzy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have had a bath. I really shouldn't. You know, felt sick. And then went and laid on my bed and then I was fine and went for a 10-mile bike ride the next day. Apple Watch again. But I think the thing that got me, the thing that amazed me was just the outpouring of support.
Yeah.
It was really, really quite something, and very grateful that people from, you know, really got the Team England total for Run 1000 moving again.
Yeah.
And the night of the marathon, I came back, I went to treat myself to a Chinese. I came back. And there was an envelope with a check in it, just addressed Marathon Man. And then the next thing, an envelope with some cash in.
Yeah, that's brilliant, yeah. Isn't it?
And, you know, people from the village, they were really good. And they're all talking about mental health. And, you know, they all put into the Just Giving page. And it was just wonderful. And the thing that got me most was the woman that works on the self-service tills in Morrison's, who I chat to occasionally when I'm in there, just buying my shopping. I said to her, I'm doing a marathon next week for charity. She came up to me on the Tuesday night after the marathon and said, did you do your marathon? And I was there, yeah. And she reached into her pocket and gave me an envelope with a tenner in it.
And that's brilliant, isn't it?
A lot of people know me and they haven't seen me since before lockdown.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people have probably been barged out the way by me as I'm on my way to a free sandwich or something.
Yeah,
it's a case of you'll never guess what Charles has done. Well, what's Charles done now? And it's just a case of you are joking.
Yeah,
I do think to a certain degree that my story has probably surprised quite a lot of people.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're being very modest because it, you know, to go from never having run to doing a marathon under 4 hours in 9 months is that's something. That is some going. I've done a few marathons. I know how bloody hard it is. And I think, you know, for people out there and people listening, you know, who've perhaps maybe they have discovered running or cycling or whatever it is in lockdown, you know, that's, you've set some example there. You'd be really proud of yourself.
I still think. If someone had told me this time last year that I would be
running
a marathon, I always try and watch, you know, follow the London Marathon's always on in the background. I don't think anybody watches it. And I've never, ever had the slightest inkling of any interest in wanting to take part in it or run a marathon. But it's just a case of trying to be proactive during lockdown. And
for sure,
a lot of people have gone the other way, and I've just tried to be as proactive as possible.
Totally. Good. So how did your involvement with Run 1000 start? Now, for people who might be in other countries, maybe they missed Run 1000, former guest and very good friend of mine, Sheena Horner, came up with this idea to get lots of people involved in running all abilities through January this year, called Run 1000. So there was a Team Ireland, Team Wales, Team Scotland, Team England, Team Rest of the World. Everybody could just get involved and come together and raise money for mental health charities. And you were, as you've mentioned, the Team England captain. How did you get involved to start with?
Well, basically, I've always encouraged Sheena with her running because I was in a very similar situation to her. And I suppose she sent me a message and to you the same message and got us together for a meeting, a virtual meeting, where I suppose it was her idea for Run 1000 to be born. And I became captain of Team England and in charge of selecting a charity. I chose the Farming Community Network, who do great work. My number one charity is the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network here in Lincolnshire. They are an organisation set up by friends for friends. But obviously, with being a national competition,
yeah,
I had to go national. So FCN were the charity, and I'm delighted that they actually do work quite closely with LRSF. And then put a team together, promote it. And it's been really quite a busy few months, which I suppose took over my life to a certain degree.
Yeah. But a total of, what was the grand total? Was it 43,000 or something?
44,000 and something.
£44,000 raised for mental health charities. That is, And those charities have really struggled, haven't they? Because, you know, they missed out on all the summer events and raising money there.
So
I think it's going to make a real difference to a lot of people, isn't it?
But, and us, I think our lot raising for FCN, I think myself and Liz, we've spearheaded a campaign, which this morning was stood at £18,210 for FCN.
Wow.
So we've gone fairly big.
Yeah.
And the goodwill towards FCN has been, exceptional.
What's the next challenge? What are you going to do next?
Me and my walking friends are planning on doing the National Three Peaks this summer.
Oh, okay, cool.
Last summer, myself and one of the walking club friends, we did something called the Lightweight Walk, which is a traverse of the North York Moors.
Okay.
In under 24 hours, 40 miles, and we did it in 13 hours, 44. So and then a couple of years before that, we did the Yorkshire Three Peaks. But obviously, I'm a lot lighter than then. I've always been a very keen walker. And one of the benefits of living in North Lincolnshire, where I do, I'm only an hour and 5 minutes from the Peak District.
Yeah.
And, we talk about mental health. The Peak District is probably my happy place.
Mm-hmm.
I remember last February, when we were allowed to go to the Peak District, I was just walking on the hills around Chatsworth. And there were a lot of things going wrong on the farm. Weather, we'd had the worst drilling season ever. Mm. Brexit was looming and everything was going wrong. And I remember walking in this beautiful day just with a friend of mine. And for that split second, I just thought to myself, at this moment in my life, I don't have a problem in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite important to have somewhere like that.
For sure.
And for me, that is the Peak District. So I've always been quite a keen walker and I've, walked extensively in the Lake District. But no, the National Three Peaks, if we're allowed to travel this summer, is on the radar.
The big question that I've got to ask, you've always played rugby in the front row. Now you've lost all this weight. Are you out of a job, or are you going to have a new role on the wing or scrum half?
I like to think.
You're going to start poncing around in the backs.
I'm not going to start poncing around in the backs at all. The one thing that I've noticed, getting off a tangent, about my weight loss is how much colder I get.
Well, it makes sense, I guess.
Unbelievable. Just losing all that insulation is... So to be stood on a wing in Market Raisin, in North Lincolnshire, in February, which is one of the coldest places on the planet in February, doesn't bear thinking about.
Right then, let's round this up with the five hard-hitting quick questions. Traditional way to start, what is your all-time favourite song?
My all-time favourite song is probably Goodbye Elevate Road by Elton John.
Oh, belter.
He's quite retro, but basically Elton John, songwriter, is from my neck of the woods.
Bernie
Taupin.
Yeah.
And historically, my mother, you know, when she was growing up, used to go with her parents to the Catholic church in Market Raisin up the road.
Okay.
With, you know, used to sit opposite the Taupins.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's cool.
And then Bernie Taupin's dad used to sell calves to my dad.
Is that right? Wow.
And came to the farm one day and said, I'm not going to be coming anymore. My son's just bought a ranch in Dakota or somewhere. There's a bit of real local. He grew up in a village called Ombre by Spittle, probably 5 miles from here. So it's really local, and all the lyrics are really local. And I suppose Goodbye Elevate Road is him talking about, does he go to the bright lights or does he stay on the farm? And obviously the farm is a Lincolnshire farm because that was his upbringing, which is very special to me, as I said, as a proud Lincolnshire man.
Brilliant. Okay. Question two. I've been thinking a bit about this lately, but I think COVID's kind of brought me to sort of thinking about this and the way life's changing and what changes COVID will make in society. But what's something that you think we'll be nostalgic for in 30 years' time? So maybe something that's disappeared or been replaced with something else. Maybe robots will be doing it. Or what do you think?
Well, I've been thinking about this most of the day, you know, when you sent me a list of questions. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes, but it's very difficult to pinpoint one thing. Will tractors be about in 30 years' time? That's the one thing which, you know, I don't really know. Everything's changing. Books are disappearing. You know, they're going on to Kindles and iPads, and the world is changing drastically, but not only superficially, if you know what I mean, because we're still reading books, we're still doing things. But will tractors be still about? I don't really know. No, that's a really, really interesting question.
We'll keep thinking about it.
I'll give you a more definitive answer next time I see you. We'll discuss it over a pint.
We will. Who would be your dream speaker for the Lincolnshire Farming Conference? So anyone in the world from any field, doesn't have to be farming. Who's your dream speaker?
This is a really difficult one. I was thinking sort of from more of a farming point of view. Norman Borlaug would be quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like the godfather of the Green Revolution.
Yeah.
But from a farming point of view, I would be, you know, the two people I would love to speak at the Lincolnshire Farming Conference, one hopefully more likely than the other, is I think I'm a big fan of leadership. I'm probably not very good at it myself, but, you know, I'm keen to see it. And I think in Minette Batters,
mm-hmm.
we've got such a inspirational leader, you know, yeah. one of the best leaders I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of leader that when they walk into a room, people take notice. They're probably
sure.
hurt.
For sure.
And then another guy, sadly no longer with us, who I think could be a great speaker to tell us about some of the people he's influenced, is John Alliston,
mm-hmm.
who was my course director when I did the Virtual Company of Farmers alumni advanced course. Really inspiring, bloke. And what was said, we won the Farmers Weekly Award, Lifetime Achievement Award. You know, he didn't shape the industry, but he shaped the shapers who shaped the industry. You know, just these really gritty,
yeah,
inspirational people. Barack Obama. There's so many people out there, but I don't think Barack Obama's quite ready for the Lincolnshire Farmers.
Well, you can only ask the question.
Yeah, exactly. Will Evans was invited this year before COVID hit.
I know. But yeah, not quite Barack Obama. Scraping the barrel, but
cheaper than Barack Obama.
Yeah, just slightly. Okay, question four. As someone, as we've heard, who's really transformed their lifestyle over the last several months, what advice would you give to anyone listening who's been inspired by your story?
Back yourself. You know, that's really quite important. Have a bit of faith in yourself. Put the hard work in. You know, this doesn't happen by luck. And I think that's part of the reason for the last 20 years I've been carrying, you know, far too much weight, because I was hoping for it to change by luck.
Mm.
And I find running easy. Yeah, fairly easy. That sounds really conceited. But when I go out for a run, I don't get breathless or whatever. My run is dictated on how my legs feel.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't always been like that. And the first 3 months I was running, I'd get back from a run, I'd be hyperventilating on the sofa, I'd be covered in sweat. And it was bloody painful.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to leave your comfort zone. It does hurt, but it does get a lot easier. And yeah have a bit of faith and, you know, you'll be fine. And any of your listeners who want any advice, whatever, don't hesitate to contact me, but do have a little faith in yourself and do go into it all guns blazing, because you get out of something what you put in.
I can agree more.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to have a go. Buy some trainers and buy some scales. and just give it your best.
Yeah. Lastly, then, traditional way to wrap up, what is your favourite agriculture-related social media account to follow and why?
Ooh, these are quite tricky. I think a good friend of mine, Farmer Tom, he's got a really interesting social media account, because he's
so balanced, isn't he, Tom? He's such a good communicator.
I know. And what he's done with Farmer Time.
Yeah.
I remember him telling me about Farmer Time when I was on that Worshipful Company of Farmers course with him. And I remember thinking, what an utterly rubbish. But he wasn't to be dissuaded, and thank God he wasn't.
Yeah.
Because we've got to communicate better as farmers with our markets.
Mm-hmm.
And he is... you know, one of those people who, you know, is such a great communicator. He's non-confrontational. He knows how to have a laugh. He's doing the Cheese a Day challenge at the moment. And he is possibly one of the nicest blokes in farming.
I always think that any parents would be delighted if their daughter brought Tom home to meet them, wouldn't they? Like, he's like the dream son-in-law, isn't he?
Absolutely. You know, he's so...
Yeah.
He's so well-groomed. Super bloke, super communicator. and someone I've had many beers with over the years and hope to have many beers with again. Yeah. And also, Stuart Roberts does an awful lot.
Yeah. You know,
not just his NFU, but his Twitter account's a very important Twitter account.
Yeah, for sure.
From health and safety point of view, you know, the works, he's a real good communicator.
Definitely, yeah.
And he's been on the same journey I've been on with even bigger results, and he's already run about 3 London marathons.
Yeah.
But now he's a top bloke. I also like the Twitter account too. It's obviously anybody that follows me on Twitter knows that I like to have a bit of banter.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be a bit more confrontational than I am, but you just see farmers going up against each other over the most inane issue. You know, we can find we're even fighting about COVID now. And it does get very boring.
It does.
So I just use Twitter to post pictures of my cats. I like to keep it lighthearted because in a world of gloom,
you've
got to have a bit of a laugh, haven't you?
I definitely agree.
I like the Twitter accounts that I'll have banter with that sort of have banter back. People like John Charles Jones, NFU wise, and people like that. But your Twitter account as well, I've learned an awful lot on your Twitter account, you know, war-wise.
Yeah, I suppose I am a bit nerdy, that kind of stuff. But
nerdy? That can be actually quite interesting.
Yeah, well,
and so. We do still need to do that Battlefields trip.
We do. I haven't forgotten. And, yeah, when the world comes back to normal, we will. It's been great to catch up, Charles. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us tonight. You're a busy man. Been incredible following your progress over the last several months.
Thank you very much.
Can't believe what you've achieved. I think you should be so proud of yourself. And I really do hope we can meet up for that beer very soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it. The one thing about weight loss, which is really obviously I look a bit different to how I used to, and people literally, metaphorically, come up to me and sort of, they don't recognise it's me. A lot of people don't recognise it's me. And they will sort of more or less poke and prod you to make sure you do. You do have to remind them about social distancing and all that kind of thing. But thank you for your kind words and having me on as your 162nd guest.
Yes, hopefully we'll catch you soon. To everyone out there, thanks for listening. I hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.